Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and now a modest proposal from Raihan Salam. No, don't eat the children, but kind of close, tax the childless. Maybe you saw his piece in Slate this week in which he proposes that in order to help working parents, we should tax workers without children much, much more. That's right, soak the childless. It just so happens Raihan himself is one of those childless young professionals. He saw his parents struggle when they were raising him, so now he's willing to pay more. Are you? 212-433-WNYC, if you're in that demographic. Raihan Salam, columnist for Slate and the lead writer of The Agenda for National Review. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
And I imagine you've gotten this too, but we posted your article on Facebook and got a wide range of response. Actually, it wasn't that wide. It ranged mostly from, you've got to be kidding me, to, is this an April Fool's joke? So have you been seeing that response? And really, did you write this as a serious proposal or as kind of a thought exercise a la Jonathan Swift's modest proposal in the hopes of just kickstarting a larger conversation?
Well, I have gotten a pretty negative response from a lot of folks, namely affluent childless people. And one thing that people miss about the proposal, which is funny because it's very clearly stated in the column, is that I'm not talking about taxing all childless workers. I'm very explicit in saying that folks who are making less than the median household income for all households should be shielded from this tax increase, number one. Number two, this is one proposal, and of course, I have lots of thoughts about tax policy, one of which is that childless workers who are poor, who are earning low incomes, should actually get subsidies. In fact, that's the whole issue that brought me into writing about politics in the first place. So what I'm simply saying is that for people who are high earners, in the sense that they are in the top half of the U.S. household income distribution, maybe they ought to pay a bit more so that working parents can pay less.
And your idea is that non-parents who earn more than the median household income, about $51,000, should be targeted with a new tax. How much?
Well, it's not so much that they should be targeted with a new tax. Here's another way of looking at it. Let's raise taxes on everybody, but let's shield parents with kids from that tax increase by giving them a child credit, right? If you frame it that way, it's pretty straightforward. But I think that what I'm trying to do is be very clear. When you say that we're going to have a revenue-neutral tax policy, but we're going to give some tax benefit to some group, guess what? People who don't belong to that group have to pay higher taxes.
Is it revenue neutral, or are you talking about once you shield the parents from this general tax increase, as you put it, it's going to be more revenue, and therefore, proportionally, parents will have more?
Well, it's revenue neutral in the sense that the goal is for the tax code as a whole to generate the same amount of revenue, right? So if you're giving a bigger break, if you're giving that bigger expanded credit to parents, then the question is, you know, it's going to be non-parents who are going to have to pay somewhat more.
I see. So why start down this road at all? I really want to get your philosophical underpinning, because we have about the replacement rate of births and immigration combined in this country, unlike much of Europe or Japan, where their population is aging and they don't have the kids coming up to replace them. So is that the reason to soak the childless who are above the median income? Is it that we need more kids for the sake of our future? Or is it just that parents have it tough and need help?
You know, Brian, there are lots of people who've written about this issue. I've written about it before, and there's lots of talk about the fertility rate and whatever else. It's all very interesting. But what I'm suggesting is very simple. It's that middle-income parents and lower-middle-income parents, working-class parents, they're squeezed. And because they're squeezed, they could use some tax relief. There are a lot of conservatives who say, well, let's give tax cuts at the high end. You know, let's change the top rate of tax. Let's focus on those guys because they're the ones who make the economy grow and whatever else. And what I'm saying is, well, wait a second. It's not just bosses. It's not just entrepreneurs who make the economy grow. It's also parents who are raising children. And I'd say that, you know, if you've got a couple earning $150,000 and one has three kids and another doesn't have three kids, has zero kids, there's a difference between the two of them that ought to lead us to treat them somewhat differently. It's very, very straightforward.
All right. Our board is full of callers. Do you have your seatbelt on?
I think I can handle it.
Jonathan in Manhattan, you're on WNYC with Raihan Salam. Hello.
Good evening. Good morning. I'm so flustered because I think it's outrageous. I'm a man who's 46 years old and put up having a family I led a life in the arts, and I exchanged a lot of that, things that I really regret, because I couldn't afford kids. That's called being responsible to the kids. And, you know, if you want me to start paying taxes for your kids, you better be ready for me to start telling you how to raise your kids, because I would rather raise some of these kids than the way I see them raised out there. But I've been responsible because I know I didn't have the money. But to tax me more, that's crazy.
It's delightful to hear tons of New Yorkers who tend to think about themselves as egalitarian liberal types just really get worked up about the idea of social engineering and the tax code, particularly since, you know, the trouble is that, boy, you guys might not have seen the tax code recently, but there are a lot of credits in there. There are adoption credits. There's an existing child credit that's pretty small. There are all kinds of little tweaks. There's the mortgage interest deduction that gives people who buy a home a way bigger tax break than someone like me, who chooses to rent. There are all of these little things in there. And so it's really interesting to hear people get so worked up about this particular idea, and it makes me wonder if they're paying attention to all of the other stuff the tax code tries to make us do.
Jonathan, thank you. And Obamacare subsidies are much more generous to single people and one or two parent families with children than couples who lack children. So in a way, would you say Obamacare, which of course you've been critical of, is creating these incentives, intentional or not, to have kids?
I'd say that all of the Obamacare replacement plans that I'm a big fan of do exactly the same thing, Brian, because, well, those are households with more people in them, right?
And you cite a similar proposal by Senator Mike Lee, Tea Party Republican from Utah. For a middle-income family with two kids earning $70,000, his plan would give them about a $5,000 tax cut or credit per year. I guess he disagrees with you about how to pay for it. But in terms of the cut itself, is that about what you're aiming for if you're making $70,000 and you have two kids to get about $5,000 off your tax bill?
I think that in an ideal world it would be bigger, but I think that that's a reasonable amount that would go a long way towards easing the burden on parents. So I think that that's a reasonable proposal. The one thing about the Mike Lee proposal that I'll mention is that it's actually not soaking the childless. Josh Barrow of the New York Times, back when he was working for Business Insider, noted that, you know, that's a tax cut that really doesn't seem to be soaking anybody. And the result is that it led to a $2.4 trillion revenue gap relative to the current law tax code. So that's a big problem.
Carlos in Montclair, you're on WNYC. Hi, Carlos.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call. I love your show, Brian.
Thank you.
I'm childless, and I think that this is really a preposterous issue. I think that if this had been aired on April 1st, I would have thought it was an April Fool's segment. Look, if I'm going to be taxed because I am childless to help out parents that have children, do I get to say to these parents, use birth control? You can only have one child. You can only have two. Where is the responsibility with these parents if you can't afford to have children? And let's say you can't afford birth control. Go to the many places in and around New York City where you can get condoms for free. Be responsible, but don't put that burden on me when you decide to be irresponsible and reckless with the way you choose to have sex.
Carlos, I'm going to go because there's so much background noise where you are, but your point is clear. And it's interesting to me, Raihan, how this proposal turns liberals and conservatives with their usual arguments on their heads a little bit.
Well, there are tons of conservatives,
He's arguing against subsidizing people who might go out and have children now because they're going to be subsidized to do it, incentivized to do it by the government, which is usually a conservative argument against welfare.
Oh, well, it's also many conservatives oppose this idea very strenuously. The Wall Street Journal editorial page, for example, is very hostile to the idea of a much bigger child credit. So I think that, yeah, I also disagree with Tea Party conservatives on many other issues. For example, should we hold people with underwater mortgages exclusively to blame for their predicament rather than creditors? That's an area where I disagree with a lot of other conservatives, too. So I think that, you know, this idea of irresponsibility is pretty interesting to me, because I'd say that, you know, a two-earner couple, you know, that has a couple of kids, I'm not so sure they're recklessly irresponsible, and that's the basis for this proposal. Rather, the idea is that, well, gosh, that two-earner couple in that particular set of circumstances earning, say, $70,000 a year is in a slightly different position from another two-earner couple without those two kids, right? And so let's tilt the balance a little bit to reflect that. I'm not saying that, you know, the idea that it's recklessness and irresponsibility is pretty darn interesting, and I hear that quite a lot. That's not the basis for actually having more equitable tax treatment of people who are making pretty big sacrifices that benefit all of us.
And when I looked at your article on Slate yesterday, what they identified as the top comment was a counterproposal to raise taxes on parents who have more than two kids because of the environmental load of having three or more. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that it's pretty silly for a lot of reasons, one of which is that, you know, if you want to start talking about environmental costs, there's a million things that we can do. For example, pricing water, pricing road usage, a load of other things that would be profoundly sensible. But I imagine that a lot of our callers, particularly those who drive or those who drink water, wouldn't be particularly enthusiastic about. But again, you know, let's think about what is the best way to meet that particular problem. And I don't think, you know, this is just me, but I don't think that the vast majority of parents in this country are wildly reckless people, and rebalancing the tax burden is something that's rewarding recklessness and irresponsibility. Quite the opposite, in fact. I think it's rewarding people who are taking responsibility.
Under your proposal, would you get a bigger tax break for four, a bigger tax break for five, then four?
Well, here's the thing. So the Mike Lee proposal is such that it's not refundable. So it goes up to your full income tax liability and your payroll tax liability. And that's pretty important because for a lot of working class people, it's actually the payroll tax burden that's much bigger than the income tax burden.
That's Social Security and Medicare.
Right, exactly. But once you actually eliminate that tax liability for both payroll taxes and income taxes, you're not getting anything on top of that.
You need the payroll taxes, don't you? I mean, we talk about how the shortfalls are coming for Medicare and Social Security. You don't want to take those streams out of the out of the Treasury very easily, do
you?
You're
absolutely right, Brian. But the thing that drives people crazy about this proposal, I've noticed, is that I actually pay for it. Rather than say, hey, let's cut taxes for some group that people like, and end of column. You know, I actually go the distance and say, well, gosh, you actually are going to create a revenue gap, so let's fill that revenue gap.
Pablo on Staten Island. You're on WNYC. Hello, Pablo.
Thanks, Brian. I agree with the whole taxation thing with people without a family, because when I was younger, I didn't have any kids. I have four kids now, and I am married. My tax return at the end of the year was a lot greater. But now that I need that extra income, and with taxes going up, food costs going up, and I need that little bit of extra income coming in. So for the gentleman prior, he was angry. Oh, I'm going to tell you how to raise your kid. No, you're not going to help me raise my kid. I'm trying to do that myself, but I need a little extra help. And if you, you know, if you don't have a kid and you could get taxed a little more and you're making more than me financially, a little bit, why not? A little bit more. I mean, I have to deal with it when taxes go up. I have to deal with it along with everyone else. So if I can get a little extra help somewhere in there, I think I'm for it. You know, I'm not so against.
Reihan for president, says Pablo on Staten Island.
Well, you know,
definitely. Definitely.
Well, I really appreciate it, Pablo. I think one thing about what Pablo says, though, I think is worth noting. He talks about a little extra help. And I think that another way of thinking about it is that actually it's Pablo who's doing all of us a service. He's the one who's giving the rest of us a little extra help by taking on the burden of raising kids and doing his best to do that, to be a responsible parent, to see to it that those kids are prepared for the workforce so that they, by the way, when Brian Lehrer and I are in the nursing home at some point in the future, you know, it's Pablo's kids who are going to be the ones who are caring for us.
I have two kids, so
that's true.
Don't put me in that category.
That's true. Hopefully your kids will look after you, Brian.
Hopefully so. But let me read a comment from Kate on our Facebook page that kind of sums up the response of a lot of our commenters. In fact, this was the most liked comment on our thread about this topic. She wrote, I have no kids and I pay plenty in property taxes to support a school system so the kids don't turn out to be uneducated idiots. I consider that my contribution.
It's actually a very interesting question. So is Kate doing us a favor by financing schools? That's a view that I think certain ultra-libertarians might have, you know, that actually having a public school system is actually this great beneficent thing. Or it could be that it's a public good that benefits everybody.
Ultra-libertarians be against the public schools altogether?
Right, exactly. They'd want to abolish them, which is implicit in Kate's remark, right?
I think she's saying she's a childless person who's choosing to live in a community with high property taxes, and she's paying her high property taxes, which are basically school taxes, and her contribution.
What I'm saying,
so
Brian,
don't raise her taxes more.
She's suggesting that it is a net contribution. What I'm suggesting is that Kate benefits rather a lot from the fact that young people are educated in our society.
Michael in Greenwood Heights, you're on WNYC. Michael, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to point out that the proposal is sort of redundant. I mean, there is a tax break for parents paid for by non-parents, and it's children are dependents that are deductible in their taxes.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. So, I mean, number one, the outrage that people are expressing about this proposal, they ought to reflect on what we have in the tax code right now. But I wouldn't say it's redundant because, again, what I propose is making that benefit more generous and tilting the scales more towards parents, particularly middle-income parents.
So people, you get the idea and you'll decide whatever you want to decide about it. Reihan Salam from National Review, this article on Slate, starting a new wrinkle in the conversation about how parents versus childless people should be taxed and their relative value to society. Let me go ahead.
Oh, well, look, it's not about relative value to society. I think that childless people like myself, yes, have tremendous value. It's about the burdens that they face.
So let me wrap it up with your political analysis from the end of your piece, which was really interesting, which is that young parents really don't stick up for themselves in our political environment. You're right. Unlike the retirees and near retirees who fight tooth and nail to protect Medicare and Social Security, we don't have a well-funded political pressure group that defends the child credit.
Yeah, that's exactly right, because, you know, this is a broad, diffuse group, and like any broad, diffuse group, it's hard to organize people. But I do think that parents, whether they're Black or Latino or Asian or white or what have you, whether they live in a rural area or in a big city, they actually do have some shared interests. They actually do have some shared burdens. And I think that they ought to unite around this, whether they're politically liberal or politically conservative. I think that would lead to a lot of progress for our society.
By the way, there is a Democratic or liberal set of proposals that I think you could say is aimed at doing the same thing. Higher wages at the low end, more accessible and stable health care, paid sick leave, longer maternity and paternity leave. Why a tax cut when we could increase these supports that are generally targeted at parents?
Well, Brian, it's actually not a tax cut. It's a tax reform, right? And I think when you're looking at Obamacare, it's actually quite similar in that sense. You're exactly right. It actually is redistributing the burdens. But, of course, you give it a different label, and then people react to it pretty differently. It's a funny thing about politics, I've noticed.
Reihan Salam, read his article on Slate. We have a link to it on our page at WNYC.org. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brian.